Your Halloween parties are spooky good because you skip the supermarket and fly straight to Smart and Final, your Halloween headquarters. You want some candy? There's a whole aisle of candy, treats, pumpkins, party supplies, and spooktacular prices up to 25% lower than supermarkets. Plus, Foster Farms whole chicken or picnic pack are 89 cents a pound, limit 4 packs. And 64-ounce First Street 100% apple juice or cider, just 99 cents. Smart and Final for Halloween. Bring on the boo!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Hang on.
I can hear you now, but I can't hear music.
Yeah, hang on.
Okay.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Berard. I am your host, Michelle Berard, founder and CEO of Urban Book Editor, LLC, and I am very, very happy to share this hour with you where we examine all those places where spirit meets life and the joys and challenges that may bring. Now, those of you who have been listening know that Somewhere in the Middle is intended to be a safe place where we can learn and grow together. We discuss a variety of topics ranging from love to politics to money to business and more, and that is because the human experience is wide and it is varied. So I know you guys have lots to share with us as well, so I don't want this to just be where we're talking at you for an hour. I want you to feel free participating and engaging. I want to hear from you. So get your questions and comments ready, because as we near the end of the show, we'll be taking calls from our audience. Now, you guys also know I like to start out by thanking Ms. Beverly Black and Tribe Family Channel for helping me to create this space for us. Tribe Family Channel is home to an assortment of thought-provoking shows exploring life, spirit, business, and culture, including The Woman at the Well, hosted by Ms. Beverly Black herself. I also want to give a shout-out to Bobby Stevens, Ph.D., creator of the Unlimited Futures programs and author of several books, including Making Sense of the Chaos, A Call to Action. You can connect with Dr. Stevens at her website, www.makingsenseofthechaos.com, and on Facebook. So if you guys missed the last show, make sure you listen to the replay. You can get to the replay, as always, by visiting Tribe Family Channel online and checking out the show recordings. You're going to want to look for the October 13th show. And you're going to want to hear that discussion about how we can better deal with the chaos and confusion in modern life that I had with Dr. Bobby Stevens. I also want to give a shout-out to Bruce George of the Genius is Common movement, which encourages all of us to embrace our inner genius and share it with the world. This is such a powerful and important message that we need to share with the youth, and, well, not just the youth, We all need to be reminded that the world needs our genius. So learn more about the Genius is Common movement at www.geniusiscommon.com. Now, I am really excited to introduce tonight's guests. They are truly a dynamic duo, partners in life as well as business. Stephen Bird, a.k.a. Bird, is an entrepreneur, project manager, and author. He has written several fiction books as well as a spiritual guide regarding the power of words entitled Speak It Into Being. His fiancée, Nicole King, is in the pharmaceutical industry, and she's using her expertise in that industry to develop an all-natural toothpaste line that is due to be released next year. Together, they own and operate a t-shirt printing company called tshirtoftheweek.us, and you can find that at that website. And their specialized t-shirt line features messages promoting positive messages for men, women, and children. Bird and Nicole's primary focus is to strengthen themselves and others spiritually, seeking and sharing the power that they believe resides in all of us. And by engaging the community and through the apparel that they market, Nicole and Stephen seek to make an impact that exceeds the financial gain that is the primary focus of their business. They believe that blessings are given so that they can bless others. Based in Phoenix, Arizona, this awesome couple is actively seeking ways to educate, enrich, and positively influence the people they encounter. So I want to welcome Stephen Bird and Nicole King to Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Berard. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle, for having us.
Yes.
Well, you know I'm really excited for a couple of reasons, right? One, you guys just came back from Egypt, so of course we want to hear all about your trip, but also the insights that you got while you were there, because I figured there's no way you could go to Egypt and not come away with just amazing insights to yourself or to the world around us. But before we get to all of that, I like to start an interview with two questions, and the reason is that I believe that they lead right into what you're doing and why you're doing it. So since there are two of you, I'm going to start with ladies first, and I'm going to ask Nicole. Nicole King, who are you, and how did you become who you are today?
I'm a self-driven, motivated woman with a lot of positive aspects to hand out to, you know, everybody around me. I'm a very spiritual being, and I believe I can inspire others with the light that's within me to shine onto others. I'm just all about positivity. That is the person that makes me. And I just like to, put it out to others.
And so how did you become who you are today?
Diligence, hard work, each and every day, putting forth effort. I think that's the key to success. So I really push on that each and every day, and I encourage it to others.
Now, how does that manifest for you in terms of diligence, hard work? What are you putting all that work into? Is it mainly the spiritual thing and then that kind of drives everything else? What was your journey to get to where you are right now in terms of, let's say, your career?
Hold on, we just had a little technical difficulty, but anyways, the whole thing that we're pursuing, and we just had a little medical thing anyways, but the whole thing is that like Nicole was saying, and she touched on quickly, she is diligent and we're diligent, and you know, our journey just starts where everybody else's journey starts, which is, you know, just kind of understanding that there's more to life than what society puts out for us, and you know, kind of seeking truth and seeking something outside of the status quo.
Well, and that gets right into Stephen Or do you prefer for me to call you Bird?
Whatever you prefer. It doesn't. It really doesn't matter. It all depends what I am, what people call me. Sometimes, you know, it depends. So either one, wherever you feel comfortable. We were introduced as Bird, so you can stick with Bird. But, you know, people professionally call me Steven and either or. So it goes back and forth.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe we'll just go back and forth. So, Steven, that gets right into that same question for you. Well, who are you and how did you become who you are today? Because you're an author. You are an entrepreneur. You manage various projects. How did you get to doing all that?
Well, I mean, I don't even know really where to start. I mean, my life has changed drastically when I decided to focus on the power that's within me and where that comes from, which is, you know, the creator of the universe. So once I started focusing on that and you know, allowed myself to think positively, honestly, things just fell into place. I don't even know how I'm in the position I am in right now, honestly. And to know that this is just the beginning is exciting. So, I mean, I came from, you know, a cliche gangbang type background, and I just decided that that wasn't something that was going to be productive. I saw a lot of people around me getting long prison terms and being disfigured and caskets and all the regular stuff. And I just said, you know what? I have to find something different. I was raised, my grandmother raised me in a Christian household, and I always had a lot of questions, and I started looking for answers, and that's kind of how it started. And that's kind of still what's going on right now.
So was there one particular event that really kind of turned things around for you, or made you have kind of an aha moment?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, just, you know, for full disclosure, obviously, my grandmother had passed. I was in a situation that I wasn't able to see her and interact with her the way I would like to. And when she passed, I realized, hey, I can't just keep going this way. I can't, you know, I got to use this time and this separation to strengthen myself, or it's going to be wasted. What's the point of being separated from your family and go through certain hardships if you're not able to use it to strengthen you and use that discipline for some type of harvest to reap some type of, you know, intrinsic and extrinsic benefits in the long run. So that's really what it was. And then I had, you know, I had a couple other close people that passed next to me, and I just realized that it was a situation that they weren't able to follow through on some of the dreams that we had, and I took it upon myself to kind of live for the ones that can't do it and weren't able to do it and won't be able to do it.
Wow. Okay. That's powerful. So it sounds like you were seeing the people around you kind of fall by the wayside, and maybe you started questioning. Is that when you started writing?
Yeah. I mean, that's really, I had an idea for one of the first books, which is The Other Side of the Coin, which, you know, Urban Book Editors is currently in the process of going to be helping me with getting that out there. And that was just something that I always kind of had a writer's voice. You know, I did music when I was younger and things of that nature. So I was pretty good with words. I'd never written a book, but I had an idea for a book, and I just kind of started working on it. And, you know, the spiritual aspect really took control. I prayed before I'd write and you know, express thanks to the universe for success and prosperity and the words to flow. And sometimes the words came so fast my hand couldn't keep up. So, I mean, it was just, like I said, I always give glory to the creator. I've been blessed with many gifts, but I wouldn't have any of that without her.
Wow. Okay, so you say that you pray before writing. Is it to calm the mind? Is it to focus your energy? What is it that makes you do that? Where did you come up with that idea, and what does it help you with?
Yeah, I mean, both calms the mind, focus the energy, focus on the task. I mean, you know, meditation, prayer, silence are all helpful tools, I feel like. So, those things are very powerful, and you know, I think prayer is kind of seen as some type of religious activity, unfortunately, when it's simply just kind of focusing on that spirit and calming the mind, like you said. So that's really where it came from, and I just, you know, because I really didn't know what I was doing at the time, you know. So I'm like, hey, you know, who can I look to for guidance? I didn't have any authors around me or any literary agents around me, so that's kind of where that came from. I just had to draw on the only energy that was available to me.
So you had nobody modeling writing behavior, but you had a background in music, you said, when you were younger. Did you play? Did you write? What did you do when you were younger?
I mean, I wrote music. I did some, you know, some hip-hop stuff, and I wrote some R&B songs and things of that nature, did some production and writing. So that was mostly my background. It wasn't anything extravagant, but, you know, it was kind of like most fledgling artists just kind of going around, and a passion for it. I definitely had a passion for it, but it was just wasn't anything that I was really totally committed to, but I did have a passion for it, and I think I was good at it.
So do you mind if I ask, where were you doing this? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in San Antonio, Texas.
So
I grew up in San Antonio, Texas. I did some music out there. I did some music in Phoenix, and kind of, you know, that's where it started.
And what kind of music did you write? Just hip-hop? Did you get influenced by some of the Hispanic music and stuff, the Mexican music and whatnot, or just strictly kind of hip-hop and R&B?
Yeah, strictly hip-hop and R&B.
Okay, I can't see, you know, that area has such a weird kind of group of people together. And the music always seems to be kind of influenced in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a melting pot. And, you know, I attribute being in that environment to kind of, and as well as, you know, my grandmother and stuff like that, to just looking at people's character individually and not as some type of stereotype or anything like that. So that helped growing up in such a melting pot of just, like, you know, Caucasians and Hispanics, and, you know, it's got a lot of bases out there, so you run into a lot of different people in San Antonio. It's a beautiful city, by the way, if you've never been.
I haven't been. That's awesome. I'm going to have to make my way down there eventually. Well, you know,
definitely.
This actually leads me to, you know, I've been reading one of your books. You were so kind as to send me one of your books, Speak It Into Being. And there are a few things that kind of stuck out to me, and I wanted to ask you about them. And one sentence, well, it not the whole sentence, but here's one part that really struck me. You said, by perfecting the habit of speaking only blessings, love, and abundance over ourselves and those around us, we allow the patterns of our speech to grow in positive, creative magnitude. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, the power of words is amazing. First of all, I've been practicing it for a while, and I've seen it manifest in different ways, and I'm sure many people, if they reflect, can see the same thing in their own lives, you know, whether they admit it or not. But, I mean, what I mean by that is, you know, when you practice speaking blessings over yourself, words are actual, you know, tangible. They're not tangible in that you can't taste them, you can't touch them, but we know they're real. So when you put those vibrations out consistently and you say, hey, man, I don't care what the obstacle looks like, I know prosperity is mine, I know success is mine, I know blessings are mine, I know health is mine, your physical reality begins to mold into those things you speak. So when you keep speaking blessings over yourself, you keep speaking blessings over the people around you, you begin to see blessings over yourself. You begin to see blessings over the people around you. So that's just what I meant by that, and kind of what the whole philosophy is based on is, you know, like Nicole had said, diligence and continue to build on that.
Well, but you know what? You go beyond that. You go beyond just the words. What you said is your thoughts are the seed, your words are the water, and you sow by your actions. So how do those three things really work together, thoughts, word, and action?
Well, I mean, I believe we're all creative beings. I believe that's the basis of, you know, the spirit that we've been given is to be creative and to create. And, you know, as, you know, the Bible tells you that we're created in the image. I don't think that means that, you know, God has arms and legs. I think that, you know, the creator is the creator, basically. So, I mean, when you think positively, a lot of times people would think positively and they won't say it because it sounds crazy. Hey, I don't have these things, so why would I speak like I have these things? Or why would I walk and talk like I have these things? And then it confuses their actions. They may think positively, but they don't speak positively, so their actions are muddled. Or they think negatively, they speak negatively. Of course, the actions are going to come out negatively. So it's a process. So the words kind of tie the thoughts and actions together, in my opinion. So when you think positively and you continue to speak positively, you're going to move that way. You're going to draw those type of intents to you. You're going to draw that type of energy to you, and you're going to act accordingly. So, you know, it's definitely practice. You know, there's a book by Joyce Meyer called The Battlefield of the Mind, and she talks about how allowing negative thoughts into your mind and things like that can hinder, you know, your progress in all areas. So that's really what I mean by that, is just you got to think positively. And then once you're thinking those thoughts, speak positively. A lot of times what you speak will influence your thoughts. You know what I mean? If you say, hey, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I rebuke that, or things of that nature, that will actually make those thoughts flee, especially when you practice more often.
So what I'm pulling from this, I'm not sure this is exactly what you intended, but this is the way I'm hearing it, is that you can think of thoughts, negative thoughts in particular, is almost like a devil or a demon, because that's what people are saying when they say, I rebuke thee. That's oftentimes where that terminology comes from, right? So that negative thought, you can literally send it away.
Yeah, I mean,
and when you do, and when you do, that frees you from those thoughts.
I mean,
am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah, in a lot of ways it does. It's a consistent thing. I mean, it's practice. You know, it can be overwhelming. And I mean, the word demon, the word devil is often misconstrued with some type of mythological character or something. And I like to think of it more on a scientific level of polarities. In order to be a up, there has to be a down. So, of course, there's positivity, there's negativity. What do you want to be drawn towards? You know what I mean? So when you draw negativity towards you, or the devil or demons or Satan or whatever you want to call those entities, the opposition, I like to call it the opposition because it's within you. So I say the opposition, when the opposition attacks you, you can allow yourself to dwell on that attack, or you can go on the offensive and draw that positivity towards you, which is the polarity and the opposite of you know, those negative attacks. And you know, a lot of times people think, oh, this sounds like some magical spell, some, you know, some bull, you know, but until you practice it, you don't know. And it's not something that you do one time and all of a sudden you float in the air, and, you know, that's a level of mastery that not many will accomplish, to be honest, you know. But when you practice, just like anything else, you're gonna see results. If you go to the gym one time, you can't expect to lose 20 pounds. You got to go every day. You got to go all the time. You have to eat right. You know, and I use the analogy of health because that's something that people can relate to often. But if you go to the gym and you want to get big biceps, you can't go one time. You can't lift 10 pounds. You have to go regularly. You have to build yourself up. And that's the same thing with the spiritual world, is you can't expect instantaneous results all the time. And that's what happens when people put the creator outside of themselves, is they unintentionally and intentionally, you know, put themselves on a lower pedestal, you know what I mean? And you know, kind of negate the powers that they've been given.
So let me ask you about that concept of putting the creator outside of themselves, because that seems to be the fundamental concept of most organized religion, really, is that there's something bigger than you. And the implication, or at least the way I think it's interpreted, is outside of you. And what I'm hearing from you is that really that same energy is inside of you. And that's
exactly
what causes, that's a, that's a creative force in and of itself. Am I hearing you correctly?
Exactly. And the thing is that most organized religions actually have that theology in their concepts. You know, they say, oh, the creator is omnipresent. The creator is everywhere. God is everywhere. Allah is everywhere in everything. But then there's like a disclaimer, which doesn't make any sense and negates the whole statement that you just made, that except inside of me. You see what
I'm
saying?
Right,
right. Except inside of these humans that are supposedly created in the image of God, but the creator is omnipresent except inside of me. Then that's not omnipresent. You see what I'm saying? So what I like to do is I like to focus on the portion of the creator that I can control, which is the portion that's inside of me. Of course, there's a creator outside of me. We see mountains. We see sky. We see stars. It's beautiful. It's great. It's lovely. You know what I mean? We see beautiful people walking around and animals, and we know that that's a part of the creation, right? But then there's a disconnect, which I believe was designed by a lot of major religions to control, is, but it's not inside of me, you know? And I have chosen the opposite route, which is I love the beautiful creation that I see outside. I love the mountains. I love the stars. I love, you know, looking at beautiful people, beautiful animals. But I can't control any of that. There's only one portion of the creator I can control, and that's the portion that she blessed me with, and that's the portion that's inside of me. So that's what I focus on, and that's the only thing that I can really control in the long run.
Well, there's something else if I'm hearing you correctly, I'm hearing you say she when you refer to the creator. And some folks would find that disturbing. Do you want to expound on that a little bit for me?
Well, it's funny you say that. I mean, he, she, it. The creator is not a person in the sky. I think a lot of people have this misconstrued vision of what God is. They think it's some old man in the sky with a beard. That's not real. That's mythological, and that's what's pushing a lot of people from religion, is subconsciously or even consciously they say, that's not real. There's not some person in the sky looking at me. That's not real. You know what I mean? So when you really speak of the creator, you're speaking of an energy. And I say she a lot of times because, first of all, it's inert. I prefer the nurturing image of a woman than the disciplinary image of a man, honestly. You know what I mean? In my opinion, I feel like the creator is more nurturing than disciplinary. We bring discipline on ourselves. But and that's all part of the universe, you know what I mean? That's all part of the creator. But I say she for that very reason, to throw people off and to, you know, sometimes empower the women I'm around, because even though I'm not a woman, I can see how always hearing the creator referred to as a he can be discouraging. I mean, how can you feel like you can accomplish true righteousness if God is a man, right?
Wow. Okay, that's an interesting insight coming from a guy, because I think even just from an editing perspective, proper grammar technically is, you know, the universal we, is referred to as he usually, you know, he this, he that, when you're referring to, you know, when you don't really know the gender of the person you're speaking of. And just the fact that that's the standard in the English language is distressing. And with all that's going on in our world right now, everything from the sexual harassment becoming a big deal in the news now, all the transgender, transsexual things coming up. I wonder if that emphasis on language and how we use it can really help to heal some of these divides that we're seeing. What do you think about the use of language in our greater society?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's definitely, you know, there's definitely an over-masculinization. Masculinization. Did I say that right? Anyways, it's definitely an overuse of the male pronoun, an overuse of masculine energy in general. That's why I feel like a lot of the situations we're in right now are because of that. We need more feminine energy. We need more feminine leadership because, like I touched on earlier, the polarities. You know, men are not women. You know what I mean? And And it's not about equal rights. It's not about any of that. It's different entities. Women are created differently than men. And people say, oh, well, that's obvious, you know, but it's more than just a physiological thing. It's spiritual thing. It's an emotional thing. It's a intuition, you know, women's intuition. We say, oh, women have intuition, but why aren't we utilizing this? Why are we discrediting it like it's not manly logic? And there's places for everything, you know. In ancient societies, women were worshipped, you know. So I feel like we've leaned so far to the masculine side that we're negating the feminine energy, and I feel like that's why we see a lot of this transgender. I feel like that energy is manifesting itself in ways that aren't understood, because subconsciously a lot of people understand that that feminine energy is needed. You know what I mean? That's why you see a lot of these men dressing like women. That's why you see a lot of these women vice versa, because it's just the energy, the collective energy is thrown off, I feel like. And part of it is the power of the words and the fact that he is manifested more regularly in, like I said, in situations of power. And like you said, the universal we is used as he. And I don't, you know, to go back to Egypt, women are treated like second-class citizens out there. You know what I mean? Just to be honest. Mm. And it's, you know what I mean? And it's unfortunate, you know. You know, obviously Nicole had a medical issue, but we had to go to a mosque and she had to cover up. And she, you know, she was like, I don't even want to go in here anymore. Like, why would I have to cover up? Why don't you have to cover up? You know, and we understand that it's culture and things like that. But it's just like, you know, there's a feminist movement out there right now for that very reason, but it's just that energy needs to come out. We need to be able to support, you know, the woman and the womb that we all come from, and support that energy and encourage women to have a voice and have an influence, because obviously the masculine energy is the reason why we have continuous wars and, you know, all these, you know, greedy ideals, I feel like.
Well, you know, I think that's really interesting for a couple of reasons. One thing, Nicole had the same response about covering up to go into the mosque that I have. Even, you know, when my girls were in high school, we get these, you know, the little book they sent home to the parents with all the rules and regs for the school, and in there was the dress code. And when you read the dress code for the girls, it was this huge long list of things they couldn't do or couldn't wear. And then the boys, it was like three lines by comparison. And you're like, wait, why is it so different? Like, a girl couldn't show her shoulders in class. And you're like, her shoulders can't be shown in class? It's, you know, they were in school in Georgia. It is hot as all get out most of the school year. The AC doesn't work that great in the schools sometimes, and you want them to not show their shoulders, but there was not anything about the boys not showing their shoulders. So Nicole and I have the exact same thought on that unfairness, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But and I wonder where, I mean, so there's a book that I read many years ago called When God Was a Woman, and it basically made some of those same references that that you're talking about in ancient societies, the creative force of the female energy was revered in a completely different way. And we only have remnants of it now in what we might call our major religions. So in, you know, I grew up Catholic, we have the Virgin Mary, and in different parts of the world, she's revered much more than she is here in the United States. Although if you grew up around, you know, Hispanic people of various varieties, you'll find that they often have much more of what I would call the goddess worship aspect of Catholicism, where they pray to the Virgin Mary, they ask her to intercede much more so than going directly to Jesus or God or whoever else. So what do you think about these shifts in the culture where all these different groups are coming together, particularly here in the United States? We're kind of a melting pot, right? What do you feel like can come out of that if you've got, let's say, you know, the Hispanic Catholic cultures, and you've got, you know, Asian traditions and, you know, Middle Eastern traditions? What do you think can come of that for us that we can pull, that we can maybe use to make things better and less contentious?
I mean, one of the first things that I think collective society has to realize, and it's very difficult, is that one way is not better than another. And that's a very difficult thing to see, because that's not how religion is taught to us. Our religions, whether you're Hindu or whether you're Catholic or you're Muslim or whatever it may be, you know, you're taught that your way is the way and everybody else's way is wrong. And I feel like that is the basis of a lot of this, like you said, contention that is in society. And the only way to do that is to say, listen, man, we got things in common. You know, you believe what you believe. I believe what I believe. Let's focus on what we believe that's in common, which is let's love. Let's practice what we preach. Let's love one another. Let's not judge one another, you know, because if you grow up in a Muslim household that teaches Islam and you read the Quran every day, guess what you're going to believe? You're going to believe the Quran. That's what you've been taught. You know, spirituality is what you're born with. You're born with a spirit. You're taught religion. And that's just reality. You know, you don't come out of the womb a Christian. It's not real. You know, you come out of the womb a spirit being, and you're taught Christianity. You know, so that's what we have to realize, is that say, hey, listen, man, regardless of whether you believe it or not, that's your way. Let's accept your way. Let's allow you to love and live the way you decide to live, as long as it doesn't interact with my lifestyle, you know, and I'm not going to judge you. And that's the basis for a lot of this stuff, is saying, hey, listen, your way is your way. My way is my way. I'm not going to just come with the conception that my way is better than your way, because that's not productive. It doesn't help anybody, you know.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more about that. I think that's one of the big challenges that we have, particularly as it relates to religion and politics, the two third rails of polite dinner conversation, right? You're never supposed to discuss those things if you want to have a nice Thanksgiving, right? But if we don't talk about them, if we don't discuss them, I feel like there's probably more danger there, because how can we ever come to any understanding of one another if we don't talk, if we don't communicate?
And that right there is the basis of a lot of the, especially in the United States, a lot of the cultural things that are going on, you know, from race to religion to, you know, politics, are because people are living in their own bubbles. You know, when you live in your own bubble, you watch TV or you look at your phone or you look at the computer, that's the only image you have of a Muslim. You know, if you've never interacted with a Muslim man or woman, you have no idea what they're like. But you're going off of what you're given in the media, you know, and that's with anything. So if you live in your own bubble and you're not interacting and having these conversations with people and understanding their beliefs and understanding what's really going on, then you'll never be able to cohabitate with anybody or, you know, coexist with anybody, because you're living in a bubble. And that's the problem, is that people are living in a bubble. There's no interaction, you know, and when there's no interaction, of course there's going to be confusion. Of course there's going to be, what really boils down to is fear, which is the polarity of love, you know. So if you're not living in love and you're in a bubble and you're not willing to interact and really give people an opportunity, then the natural conclusion is going to be fear. And when you fear, you get angry and you want to push people away, and you know, that's manifested in a lot of the propaganda and situations we're seeing right now.
Well, I feel like you're like snatching words right out of my brain, or whole phrases right out of my brain. Because one of the things I tell my children all the time is the opposite of love is not hate. It's actually fear. And that's what makes people act out. I know I act out when I get scared. You know, when I get fearful, I act out. And I look at it, it's like, you, it's not that you are, you know, hateful of whatever person or thing is making you act out. You usually actually a little terrified on some level. And the question is, how can we get in there and figure out on individual levels and maybe on a societal level how to, you know, deal with that fear in a more constructive manner?
I mean, the only way I can see is just have interactions, you know. I mean, it starts off, there's a lot of there's a lot of pre-programming going on. People have to start thinking critically, you know, and in our society in particular, critical thought is not encouraged. You know, I remember being young and asking pastors, well, if you have to believe in Jesus to go to heaven, what about people who've never heard of Jesus? Where do they die? Where do they go? And there was really no answer. And then some people would say, oh, well, they go to hell. Well, I said, how can they go to hell if they never had an opportunity to go to heaven? You know, so critical thinking is not encouraged. Critical thinking is not encouraged in school. You know, it's a regurgitation of so-called facts a lot of the time. You know, so critical thinking is not encouraged. You're not supposed to question how did Columbus discover America when there already were people here, when there already was societies here. How do you say somebody discovered something when there were already societies here for thousands of years? How was that discovery? But you're not supposed to ask those questions. You're supposed to just go along and be pre-programmed. And that's one of the issues, is that people got to think for themselves. You know, don't think about, you know, the man on the pulpit may be right, but be willing to question what he's saying. Be willing to do some research on what he's saying. You know, for example, when we had went to Jerusalem, and there was a guide, and we were at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is where supposedly Yeshua or Jesus was crucified, Golgotha, and all this stuff. So he was saying, oh, well, when Jesus was crucified, a drop of blood fell through a crack in the ground and woke Adam up. I said, that's nowhere in the Bible. Where are you getting this from? But a lot of people are just sitting there soaking it up. Maybe they've never read the Bible. Maybe they've never read the Quran, and they're just taking what people are telling them as fact. And that's part of the main problem, is that people aren't thinking critically. In an age of information, if you're ignorant, it's because you want to be ignorant. You got a computer in your pocket. Do some research.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that is a powerful statement. We have at our fingertips the ability to gather information. Now, we have to vet that information, of course. We have to check it against other sources, make sure it makes sense, make sure it's reliable. But we have so much power right in our pockets to be able to go out and get information. But you went halfway across the world to get knowledge, to get information, right? What did you come away with from your trip to Egypt? I'm curious.
Oh, I mean, first of all, man, the people are beautiful. What the media portrays as far as being fearful, being over there, like when we were booking our trip, it had like a level, yellow threat level or something crazy, you know, to discourage people from traveling. Yeah, it was ridiculous. We went over there, couldn't have been more safe. There was a night where we wandered around Cairo. We really got lost, which I don't like to admit that, but I couldn't find the hotel. We were walking around a city of 25 million people, people everywhere, you know, for about 1 or 2 hours a night. Nobody harmed us. Everybody wanted to help, you know.
Oh.
So even though there was, you know, I only know a handful of words. Nicole only knows a handful of words, but they wanted to help the best they could, you know. And so, first of all, the people are wonderful. The land is beautiful. The food is great. But what I really realize is that, man, the Egyptian history is just so vast and broad, and we don't give them enough credit for their ingenuity and the things that they've done, you know, and it's just a beautiful land. And what I got from it is just, you know, there's such history, such rich history, and such power in that land, and just looking at it just was awe-inspiring, really.
So what all did you see when you – did you go out – I'm presuming you went to the pyramids, and what all did you see?
We went to the pyramids. We went to, obviously, all that stuff, the Sphinx and the Great Pyramids, and we saw the Bent Pyramids. The Bent Pyramid and the – I think it's called the Red Pyramid. We went to Memphis. We went to Luxor, so we saw the temples down there, the temples of Luxor, the temple Hatshepsut, which was, she was a queen that was posing as a king, basically, just for the people. Everybody knew she was a woman except for the people, probably. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how that worked, but she was the queen king. We saw her temple. Then we went to Sharm El Sheikh, Alexandria. We saw the new library at Alexandria and some of that stuff, a few mosques. So we went everywhere except for Aswan, which now we have to go back to go to Aswan because we didn't get to Aswan.
Wow. Okay, so you soaked in this history, you soaked in the culture. Sounds like you fell in love with the people.
Yeah, they're great. They're really great people. I mean, like I said, you know, the situation with the women is unfortunate, but there are, you know, there is a feminist movement. One thing that I was pleased about, because it's like, from what we heard, it's like 70% arranged marriages. But what was kind of, you know, comforting about the situation was that the woman does get to choose, and she can deny an arranged marriage. So that was,
okay.
I was like, okay, at least she's not just like forced to live with this man, you know, but I don't know how much she can really say if her family's like, oh, well, we want you to marry this man. But from what I understood, there are women that say, hey, no. And then, of course, we met some young professional women and stuff like that that were, you know, kind of living outside the cultural norms at this time. But, the people were great. They're so friendly. And, you know, they just want to live just like we all do. They just want to take care of their families and enjoy life and, you know, the same foundation that we all stand on, I believe.
Yeah. So let me ask you, were they asking you, since you're an American, you know, what's going on in this country with regard to our president and the tweeting?
I had a few conversations. There was one in particular. There was I guess he was probably like a lieutenant or a captain or something, and he was at the airport in Sharm El Sheikh. So he was a high-ranking guy because he was running everybody that was there. And he told me that he's been to, you know, the United States several times, and he actually had got a visa approved recently, but they wouldn't approve a visa for his wife. And he was like, that's ridiculous.
Wow.
He's like, that's what Trump is doing. He's like, so I haven't been able to return lately because they won't approve a visa for my wife. I'm not going to go to America for, you know, 2-3 weeks without my wife, you know. And that was a little disconcerting. And obviously, I think, you know, a majority of people, where they admitted to not know that, you know, this guy was not prepared for the role that he was given. But at the same time, I use this analogy a lot when I talk about our current administration, is that I don't want him to fail. And the reason is because we're all on the same plane together. It's like if the captain, if you don't like the captain of the plane, the pilot, you don't want him to crash the plane because you don't like him. You still want him to get there safely, right? You still want to get there safely. Okay? So I don't like the pilot, but let's get there safely and land this plane, and we'll talk about it after we land, right? So, you know, a lot of people want to, you know, be divisive, and that's partially his tactic. Primarily his tactic was being divisive. And I heard Obama speaking somewhere, and he was like, hey, you know, he wasn't talking about Trump directly, but he was like, I'm not gonna be a proponent of these divisive tactics, because if you divide people, it makes it a lot more difficult to guide them later when you've already divided them. You know, so
yep.
That's kind of the analogy that I use as far as the plane. I don't want to crash the plane. I'm on the plane. You know. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, wisdom from our former president.
Yeah. Definitely.
That's
so
awesome.
I mean, Donald Trump has obviously been an opponent of Obama since before he had political aspirations, and I mean, he's still doing the same thing. His only actions in office have been to dismantle President Obama's actions. So it's kind of like, I don't know what we stand to gain by, you know, dividing ourselves. But the good thing is that it's getting people talking. A lot of people who never paid attention to politics are paying attention now. So a lot of people that, you know, may not have spoke up before are recognizing that something's going wrong. And, you know, understanding and recognizing something is wrong is the precursor to change. So that's exciting.
Well, that goes to something else you wrote in your book, and I hear Sid with some regularity, progress is a process. And so I'm presuming that sometimes that process is moving very quickly and everybody's kind of on the same page, and other times maybe not so much.
Definitely. You know, I mean, a lot of times we get discouraged. I know a lot of people personally, you know, some of my associates and friends and family members, and, you know, they all want to achieve greatness, right? We all want to be great at something and have these, you know, these perks that come with greatness. But a lot of people don't want to put in the effort to get that, you know. And, you know, and one example I use, like in my construction career, I started out picking up trash on the job site. And that's how I started in construction. You know what I mean? I started off as a laborer. The lowest rung on the construction ladder was what I was doing. I was picking up rocks and trash and sweeping out units. That's what I did, you know. So I use the analogy. I say everybody wants to be a project manager, but nobody wants to pick up trash. On the construction site, you know. And you got to be willing to put in the effort to go somewhere. If you don't know how to do finished carpentry, how do you expect to just go from zero to project manager? That doesn't make any sense. And that's kind of like the mindset that especially my generation and the generation behind me have, is like, oh, well, just give me everything. But I don't want to put any effort. I don't want to start from the bottom, you know. I want the good paying job right off the top. Well, you don't have any experience. You don't have any jobs. You don't have any qualifications. You don't have a resume. How do you expect to have a $100,000 a year job? That doesn't make any sense. But it doesn't seem to correlate to a lot of people's mindsets right now. So that you got to put in the effort, and that's, you know, progress is a process, and that people don't want to take baby steps. People just want to jump to the finish line, you know, from the starter. They don't want to stretch. They don't want to train. They just want to go from start to finish. They want to teleport.
Well, I know sometimes I want to teleport. When I go to the gym, I want to go and pick up 10 pounds and just get great, strong muscles, Bird. I'm just saying, you've been very discouraging to me in that regard.
I think we all do, but unfortunately, that's not the reality. That's not the reality. We've been getting the opportunity to create time is an opportunity to experience what we're creating. So every day we sit around and we don't go to the gym, guess what you're creating? You're creating that unfit body. That's just reality. You know, when you decide to eat something that you know is not the most healthy, which we all like to do at all times. I'm far from perfect. I'm not, you know, 1% body fat or anything crazy like that. But you create what you have. You're creating everything day by day. What you decide to devote your time to is going to manifest in your reality. If you decide to devote your time to the gym 4 hours a day, guess what? In a couple months, you're going to be in great shape. You know, that's reality. If you devote yourself to laying on the couch eating Cheetos, guess what? Your body's going to reflect that you've been laying on the couch eating Cheetos. So that carries over to anything, mental, spiritual, you know. If you say, hey, man, there's a portion of my education that I want to fix, how do you fix it? You don't fix it by just thinking about it. You got to actually make the effort. The thought is the start, you know, but you got to actually make that effort and go read and go, you know, research and do those things in order to get the results that you desire.
Very cool. Well, I'm going to stop us for a second because we do have a couple of callers. We're going to open up the lines and see if anybody has a question for us. Let's see, area code 323. Area code 323, you there, caller?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Hi, do you have a question for Bird?
Hey, how you doing, Bird?
Hey, how you doing, brother?
All right, how you doing, Nicole?
Like I said, she's predisposed right now, but she's doing well.
She's predisposed? All right, my name is Kalani. My name is Kalani Chapman. I'm calling in from Chopper Style Publishing. I also have read your book, man. You know I'm a huge fan too, and I wanted to know just your experience and your mind frame when you came back from Egypt. You took your trip from Egypt. What did you get out the trip? Like, what did you mostly get out that trip? Like, from you on a personal level, on the experiential and on a spiritual level, both?
Well, you know, first of all, I know Kalani very well. Just put that out there. Anyways, but I appreciate your support, you know. But anyways, the thing that I got from it the most on a personal level is, you know, I didn't grow up in a very affluent home. You know, I grew up in the opposite, and those were things that we never thought we would see. Those were imaginary, you know, in a way. You know, so that was one thing that I reflected on, is just looking back where I came from and, you know, how I grew up and just the progress that was made. And the other thing is just to see how intricate those structures were and how much time they put into it made me want to just double my efforts on what I'm doing, because it showed me that, hey, if you put in effort, it will last. You know what I mean? And right. They put time into carving those structures and artifacts and stuff. So it's a beautiful thing. That was the main thing, is just, you know, keep putting forth the effort, keep being diligent, and what you're building will last.
Right, right. That's all blessings, man. All blessings. Yeah. When you was in Egypt and you went into the Valley of Kings and you seen the pharaohs and the tombs of the kings and King Tut and all the rest of that, what did that leave? What did that impression leave with you? Just the experience for us that never got a chance to make it here, just to, like, what mind state did that put you in seeing that?
I mean, just kind of to double back on what I just said, like, just to see how intricate it was done and, you know, how people put forth so much effort, you know, for the greater cause, because obviously the pharaoh didn't carve those, you know, and you know, from what was explained to me is that the people did those things not for money, but they did that because they felt like if they did that for the pharaoh, they would be blessed, you know. So kind of being selfless sometimes and be willing to sacrifice yourself for the greater good. You know, because even though their names are lost in their history books and we'll never know who they were, the evidence of their work is there, you know. So sometimes you don't see what you're doing and how great it can be. You don't see the plant grow, but you got to just keep planting seeds anyways and just keep doing what you can do and play your role and just push towards that positivity.
Right. Well, blessings, man. Awesome. I appreciate the time, and I would love to read that book you said you read in high school called "If God Was a Woman."
It was called "When God Was a Woman," and I wish I'd read it in high school. Yeah, it's an academic book, actually, with lots of research, lots of notes, you know, and references. I think you'd find it really interesting. And actually, Ferg mentioned a book here. I want to go back because I jotted a note here of it, because I like getting book recommendations, so I appreciated him mentioning this book. Let me see where I wrote it down. It was about the battle for the mind, the battlefield of the mind. Is that what? Yeah. So tell us, what was it about that book that was so powerful for you?
I mean, it of course it comes from a religious angle because it's Joyce Meyer, but, you know, if you peel back the layers, it just talks about controlling your thoughts and, you know, how a lot of things are manifesting in reality start off with your thought processes. So, you know, you have to constantly, you know, work on, like we spoke about, thinking positively and thinking productively in order for those things to manifest in your reality. So That's the basis of the book, and it's a great book, and I encourage a lot of people to read it. Another book that I feel like you would be interested in, particularly Michelle and any of the listeners, is there's an author named Neil Donald Walsh, and he talks a lot about the evolution of spiritual and religious thinking. And if you get a chance to read any of his books, he's great.
Awesome! Thank you so much for that. Thank you, and thank you, caller, for calling in and having a question for us. We are actually coming to the top of the hour, and we're going to be wrapping up. But, Bird, why don't you tell us what you and Nicole have going on? What do you want our listeners to know about?
I mean, they can go to T-Shirt of the Week, the letter T, shirt of the week.us, You know, we have the shirt line there. They can contact us through there. We have the Speak It Into Being book. They can go on that site and contact us, and we'll send a free digital copy of that book to them as well. So, I mean, just mostly just think critically. I want people to think critically. I want people to think for themselves. I don't want them to think what I think. I just want them to just, you know, be positive and just continue to just, you know, seek their truth, you know, and not just follow the mold that they've been told to follow.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming on the show. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk to Nicole more, but I want to encourage everyone to follow Stephen Bird and Nicole King. Where can they find you? Can they find you on Instagram, on Facebook?
Yeah,
what are your handles?
Yeah. Instagram, Facebook, it's the same thing, T-shirt, the letter T, shirtoftheweek.us. And they can find all that there, and, you know, a lot of the content. We're kind of pushing the apparel right now as far as, you know, a lot of the messages that we talk about are on this apparel. So, you know, they're definitely, the apparel comes with responsibility because when you wear it, people may have questions and want to ask you questions. So we have that, and then they can get in contact with us on, you know, Facebook and Instagram through that same handle, teacherstheweek.us, and then we can, you know, the books and everything are associated with that same site.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me here on Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Berard. That is our show for this week, guys. You can reach out to me online at urbanbookeditor.com or on Facebook and Instagram as Urban Book Editor. Send me a note. I'd love to hear from you. And feel free to send some topics you'd like us to cover on the show. Again, I'd like to give a big shout-out to Beverly Black, Tribe Family Channel, and all the members of the Tribe Family Channel. It is a pleasure and an honor to be a part of it. And I want you guys to listen for me, let's see, Next Tuesday, I'm going to be on The Woman at the Well at 5 p.m. Pacific. So you can find that at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. So look out for me, guys, and call in and ask questions and make comments. Teach me stuff. I like to learn from other people, too. So you guys, be good, stay mindful, remain prayerful, and I will see you again on Tribe Family Channel on Friday. Oh, let's see. That's going to be November. What date is that, man?
Third.
November something. 2 weeks from now. I think it's the 13th, something like that. Look for us 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain, and 5 p.m. Pacific. Peace and blessings, y'all. Thanks. Oh, November 3rd. Thanks, guys.
Your Halloween parties are spooky good because you skip the supermarket and fly straight to Smart and Final, your Halloween headquarters. You want some candy? There's a whole aisle of candy, treats, pumpkins, party supplies, and spooktacular prices up to 25% lower than supermarkets. Plus, Foster Farms whole chicken or picnic pack are 89 cents a pound, limit 4 packs. And 64-ounce First Street 100% apple juice or cider, just 99 cents. Smart and Final for Halloween. Bring on the boo!